Every fulfillment is the result of a necessary relinquishment. There is always a necessity to abandon something when you want to attain something. Because the attainment of an objective always calls for such a readjustment of conditions that it is tantamount to an abandonment of those precedent conditions which are inconsistent with those necessary for the purpose of the longed for attainment. The practice of abhyasa, particularly ekatattva abhyasa, mentioned by Patanjali in his great sutra, is coupled with what is known as vairagya, or the spirit of renunciation, a most difficult thing to understand, a still more difficult thing to practice. What is it that you are going to relinquish? So that abhyasa or practice may become steady and effective. Practice becomes ineffective and does not appear to produce the expected results on account of the absence of this essential requisite called vairagya or renunciation. Abhyasa vairagya abhyam tannirotha. The control of the modifications of the mind is made possible by the practice of concentration on one reality and of vairagya or the relinquishment of false ways. All our experiences in this world have an element of falsehood in every one of them. Though there is also an element of positivity in them, on account of which they seem to be drawing our attention towards them. Nevertheless, they are covered over with dust and dirt and mud and what not. Each aspect has to be carefully eliminated from their essentiality. The difficulty in the practice of vairagya or renunciation lies in the difficulty of discriminating between false values and true values in life. The true values and false values get mixed up in such a way that we always mistake one for the other due to erroneous judgment and wrong perception through the senses. Our experiences are illusory and do not always reveal the facts behind themselves. We have various kinds of experience every day, and none of them can be called wholly true, though there is something in them which is elusive in character. And because of the mysterious character of this elusive something, we are unable to get rid of these experiences, nor are we satisfied with them. We are in such a set of circumstances that we can neither completely get away from them because of the painful aspects present in them, nor can we completely wed ourselves to them on the supposition that there is something worthwhile in them. They seem to have a twofold character. one getting emphasized at one time and the other at another time, so that we swing from one state to another state without being able to get satisfied with any one particular thing. All our experiences are ultimately of such a nature that they have to be abandoned one day or the other, says Patanjali. The world is made of such stuff as dreams are made of, as Shakespeare put it in some place. The world is made of such stuff as dreams are made of. Parinama tapa samskara dukhaihi gunavritti virodhaccha dukhameva sarvam vivekina. This is a pertinent aphorism of Patanjali, relevant to the practice of vairagya or renunciation. All is pain in this world, if you properly investigate into the truth of things. There is no real joy anywhere. Even the so-called joy is not really a joy. It is a form of pain only, appearing as joy. If you know this truth, you will not run after the joys of this world. The joys and satisfactions of this world are pains coming in a camouflage, deceiving you, and putting on a counterfeit face, so that you are kept under perpetual deception throughout your life, and you are never allowed to open your eyes and see what things there are. The consequence of enjoyment in this world is painful, says Patanjali. This is what is known as parinama in this particular sutra. Parinama tapa samskara dukhaihi gunavritti virodhaccha dukhameva sarvam vivekina. For a person of understanding, everything is wretched and painful in this world. But if there is no understanding, everything looks all right and beautiful and happy. But let there be understanding and you will see the truth of things. Oh, it is horrifying. It is not so happy as it appears on the surface. The consequence of joy is sorrow. It is very strange indeed that the consequence of joy should be sorrow. You would rather expect that the result of joy would be joy only. No, not so, says Patanjali. Whenever there is an occasion for joy in this world, there is a sorrow following it afterwards. If you today you laugh, tomorrow you shall cry. This is how the world is made. Whoever laughs today shall weep tomorrow. Because of peculiar features of which the world is made, and of which we have no knowledge and cannot have a knowledge. The consequence or the result of happiness or pleasure in this world is grief or sorrow afterwards. The reason is that joys are not really satisfying. No pleasure in this world can satisfy you, because it is not a pleasure at all. It is a counterfeit coin that comes in the middle and tries to introduce itself in the midst of true values. Just as a false currency note or a false coin can get introduced into the right ones and then pass currency. The false values which deceive us are responsible for the grief that follows the pleasures of life. The pleasures of life are not really pleasures because they are brought about by false causes. False causes cannot produce right results. Why are you happy? What is the reason behind your pleasure? Every pleasure in life is an effect produced by a cause. If the cause is real, the pleasure would be real. But is the cause real? Go deep into it and find out. The cause is an inscrutable, ununderstandable set of circumstances And if you go deep into the nature of the cause of any happiness in this world, you will find that you cannot know where it is. You cannot know why you are happy and where the pleasure lies. You are simply tossed from one center to another center, and tossed in such vehemency and with such force that you have no time to think and your brain will be giddy. If a person is to be deceived and not allowed to think properly, what is essential is to brainwash that person. Go on hammering some idea into that person wrongly, again and again, as some politicians are accustomed to do. And this hammering of false ideas repeatedly produces such a habit of thinking in the mind that it loses control over its essential way of thinking. It is impossible by any stretch of imagination to find out the cause of happiness. We are simply happy without knowing why we are happy. If you know why you are happy, then you will never have the occasion to be happy again, because you will know that there is something seriously wrong at the back of things. You are pushed and pulled by forces of which you have no knowledge and over which you have no control. Certain biological conditions inside are responsible mostly for our pleasures or the so-called joys. These biological conditions are connected with sociological and psychological states. We cannot understand all these things. Even a best sociologist or psychologist cannot understand them because they are very, very deep-rooted. Our existence is a multifaceted complex. It is not an indivisible unit called this body even. We are not merely a physical body. We have got also a social aspect connected with this physical existence. You know very well how far you are connected to human society and how much a societal or social condition can influence your joy or sorrow. You have a physical constitution, a biological setup, and a psychological pattern of thinking, influenced also by social order. And more than all these, the natural setup of things, the conditions or the rules or laws of nature itself. These things press upon us from every side for a particular reason of their own. And to yield to a pressure is a joy. This is a very interesting thing for us to understand. Wherever you yield to a very pressing, emphasizing, annoying, irritating compulsion to which you have been accustomed for a long time, and which you have made a part of your nature due to a habitual frequenting in it, the moment you yield to that pleasure, you feel a sense of relief from tension. Suppose you carry a heavy load on the head, 2 months of weight on the head you have got, and you throw down the weight and you feel happy. Ha! Very great joy has come because I have thrown the load down. You are unhappy because of the load of a tension of nerves. And when the load of the tension is thrown, there is happiness. Now, can you call this happiness merely because you threw your load from the head? Very strange indeed. When you had no load on your head, you were neither happy nor unhappy, you are not thinking about it. Now none of you has got any load on the head. But suppose I keep one wand on some of your head. Oh, the great pain has come. You throw it down, you are happy. Now suddenly the happiness has come for no reason whatsoever, merely because I kept a load and threw it down. If the absence of a load on the head is to cause you happiness, you must be very happy just now. All of you must be terribly happy because you have no load on the head. but you are not happy. But I will keep a load on your head just now and then throw it. Then immediately you are happy. Now look at this strange, peculiar causative factor behind our happiness. It is not merely the absence of load that causes you happiness, in which case you will be all happy just now. I must keep a load and then throw it down. This is what you want. This is what happens to us every day. A load is kept on the entire nervous system by social conditions, biological conditions and natural conditions. And we have no knowledge of any of these conditions. We are ignorant of social laws, ignorant of physical laws and ignorant of biological laws. Because we are utter slaves of these conditions. An utter slave, bond slave, cannot know anything. He is simply an automaton, a machine driven by the master. The masters are these forces, the biological forces, the natural forces, the social forces. But we have been born into these forces, like bond slaves. If my father was a slave, I am also a slave because I am his son. Hereditary slavishness is continuing. So we are all slaves and slaves and slaves to the core of our being, slaves to forces which are external to us, compelling us, impressing upon us, pressing upon us, and we are forced to yield to this pressure. And a yielding to a pressure from outside cannot be called an act of freedom. So a joy in life is not an act of freedom. It is slavishness that makes you happy. What a pity. Can this be called a pleasure? When it is caused by a slavish mentality, when you yield to a compulsive external pressure, you call it freedom? And where there is no freedom, can there be happiness? And yet, how is it that you are happy? Merely because of the absence of freedom. This is the reason why every so-called joy in life is followed by a real sorrow. Because sorrow is at the back, and the joy is only an outer whitewashing that has been given to the real substance that is behind, namely subjection to forces, which is the essence of pain and sorrow of every kind. So, the consequence of the pleasures of life are sorrows only. No person who is happy today can be happy always. Today's joy is followed by tomorrow's sorrow, because the reason is that these pleasures have not been caused by real or true factors. They are unreal factors. Also, says Patanjali, there is anxiety following. When you are enjoying a pleasure, you have anxiety in your mind. Oh, something is not all right. Who is telling you that something is not all right? If something is not all right, how can it cause pleasure? It's a very strange thing. Everything is strange if you go into it. A person who is possessed of an empirical happiness is anxious at the back, at the bottom of his mind. Because there is a feeling that this pleasure will pass away. How long will it continue? How long can you be happy? Let us know. You know that it will pass away in a very short time. So there is a feeling of anxiety. Oh, it is going. It is bound to go. And after that, what happens? I have been left at sea, I have lost it, and I am sorry once again. So the pleasure comes like a lightning flash and vanishes. And because of the apprehension of such a possibility, the mind is unhappy even at the time of enjoying. A rich man is happy because of the fear that he may lose that wealth one day or the other. He knows very well, I will lose it. Something will happen. So even when you are possessed of large amount of wealth, there is a subtle insecurity felt within, which is gnawing inside at the subconscious level. So consequence of happiness is sorrow, is one reason. And there is anxiety present even at the time of the enjoyment of the pleasure. So you are not secure, you are insecure even at that time. And third factor is samskara, is an impression produced in the mind at the time of an enjoyment. The mind is something like a gramophone plate on which there are grooves. And you know, if you sing a song before a mic and arrange the mechanism in such a way that a copper plate is manufactured simultaneously for the production of gramophone plates, you sing only once and the grooves are formed on the plate. Then you can go on relaying this plate any number of times and your song can be heard a million times. You have sung only once, and it can be repeated any number of times, merely because of the grooves that have been formed in the plate. And these grooves are the sanskaras, the impressions formed by a particular experience. So, if there is an urge for the satisfaction of a particular desire, and it is fulfilled temporarily by false causes, as mentioned, an impression is formed in the mind of that condition which produced that temporary happiness. Then what happens? There is a desire to repeat that happiness again and again on account of the presence of that groove in the mind formed like a gramophone plate. A particular experience produces a particular groove in the mind. A samskara or impression is formed. A vasana is generated. And this groove becomes the cause for a further desire to repeat that experience indefinitely. Any number of times you go on repeating it, you will never be satisfied. And the second experience produces another groove, which calls for a further experience of a similar type, which when fulfilled produces a third groove, a fourth groove, etc., until there are grooves and grooves and grooves in the mind, so that the mind becomes a dustbin. It is not at all a clarified clean slate. It is a muddled something, a hodgepodge, a confused heap of unclear notions and hazy impressions of past experiences, which have made what we are today hopeless individuals, who can neither know the beginning nor the end of our life. So the samskara that is formed as a consequence of a pleasurable experience is also a cause of sorrow, because that will be repeated again even in the future lives, not merely in this life. Parinamatapa-samskara dukhaihi. For these reasons, says Patanjali, everything is painful in this world, not really joy. There is a last reason he gives why things are unhappy. Gunavritti-virodhaccha dukhameva-sarvam. These experiences are caused by the operation of the gunas, called sattva, rajas and tamas. We do not know why we are happy. For instance, the happiness that we experience is due to a sudden surge of sattva guna in our mind, temporarily, maybe for the flash of a second, and the pressing down of rajas and tamas due to certain reasons. The motion of prakriti or nature is something like the movement of a wheel. You know that the wheels have spokes, and the spokes move together with the movement of the wheel, as in a car. When the vehicle moves, the wheel also moves. And when the wheel moves, the spokes also rotate. The spoke that is up or at the top will come down, and that which is down will go up. So there is a repeated going up and coming down of the spokes of the wheel when the wheel moves on account of the motion of the vehicle. Nature is in perpetual motion. It is not static. Nothing can be permanent in this world. Everything moves. And in this motion, what actually moves is nothing but a set of conditions, forces called the gunas of prakriti, nature if you call it, And these gunas are sattva, rajas and tamas. What are these gunas? These gunas are the constituents of nature, the substance of prakriti, the tendency to stability of a particular condition, inertia as you call it, is what is known as tamas. The tendency to movement, action, and urge towards external things is called rajas. Sattva is a peculiar thing which cannot be properly analyzed because it is a state which supervenes when both these conditions subside, tamas as well as rajas. Sattva is an equilibrated condition of mind where it is neither static inertia of an unconscious nature, nor is it an urge towards an external something. So in a state of sattva, you are neither urged towards an external object, nor are you unconscious. So you can imagine what that state is. What is that condition of mind where it is not thinking of an object and yet is not unconscious? That is sattva. But that state is very rare in life. We cannot be in this condition for all times. Either we are thinking something outside or we are sleeping. But can there be a condition where you are not sleeping and yet not thinking of an object? That state, how many times can you experience in life? But that is sattva. By a media between rajas and tamas, a balance between inert unconsciousness and diversifying, externalizing urge towards objects of sense. Now these gunas of prakriti are perpetually in motion like the spokes of a wheel. Nature evolves, which is something like the movement of a vehicle. And these gunas are the spokes of the wheel of nature. And when there is evolutionary movement, a movement of everything in the world, these conditions called the gunas also are set in motion. Now these gunas constitute not merely the external physical objects, but also the mind inside. The mind also is a part of nature. It is not a subject par excellence. It is an object ultimately speaking. Though the physical object is external to the mind itself is external to consciousness. So from the point of view of pure consciousness, the mind also is an object. It is not subject. Though it appears as a subject, with respect to physical objects outside. So inasmuch as the mind also stands in the position of an object, it comes within the law of nature. It is conditioned by the gunas. It is constituted of sattva, rajas and tamas. And in this movement of the three gunas, the mind also is set in motion. That is why the mind is restless. The mind never rests for a moment because it is urged by the law of evolution. When the universe evolves, moves forward, the mind and body and every blessed thing conceivable is drawn, dragged together by the force of the evolutionary urge. In this motion, the gunas of prakriti are not in a state of balance. They are perpetually moving. There is up and down, progression and retrogression, going down and going up, etc., etc., so that there is an unintelligible activity going on both outside and inside oneself. When rajas comes up, we are distressed and distracted and agonized and placed in a state of insecurity and unhappiness. Sometimes we are very unhappy. We are disturbed. The moment you get up in the morning, you say, oh, something is wrong, I am not all right. you do not know what has happened to you. You put on a Sunday face or a castor oil face and don't want to speak to anybody. What has happened to you, I don't know, I am not well. This is rajas coming up. Sometimes in the morning he will say, I don't want to get up and sleep only. Don't talk to me. This is tamas. Either you do not want to do anything at all and would like to be in a torpid condition on account of the supervening of tamas in the mind, or you are dejected in melancholy mood due to the operation of rajas. Occasionally, rarely, due to a coincidence of various rare factors, there is a cessation of the activity of rajas and tamas. Especially when the mind comes in contact with certain conditions which it regards as desirable. There is no such thing as an object, ultimately speaking. It is only a set of conditions. And the mind also is a set of conditions. When there is a compromise temporarily between the internal set of conditions of the mind and the external set of conditions known as the object, there is a sudden flash of similarity, a sympathy established between the mind and the object, and there is a flash of a so-called imagined unity between the subject and the object, and there is immediately a happiness experienced like the flash of a lightning. The flash of happiness is occasioned because of a temporary subjugation of rajas and tamas brought about by this momentary sympathy established between the mind and its object outside, due to the equilibrium or the equality of the frequency in the operation of the mind and the character of the object. Buddhist psychology is very fond of emphasizing that all things in this world are unsubstantial. By which they mean, what they mean is that nothing in this world is solid, and the solidity of an object is only an illusion created by the sympathy established between the experiencing mental condition at a given moment of time and the prevailing condition outside at a particular point in space, with which this internal condition gets connected, and this connection temporarily established creates the illusion of a permanent and solid object in front of the mind, and it feels happy by coming in contact with it. The happiness which the subject experiences in its connection with the object is due to a temporary pressing down of the rajasic and the tamasic activity of nature, and the sympathetic character experienced between the mind and the object outside, which condition will suddenly go down when the other spoke comes up, namely rajas or tamas, so that immediately after the joy, there is sorrow following due to the coming up of rajas or tamas. So gunamritti virodhat, on account of the opposition of the gunas, which are never in the state of equilibrium, there cannot be permanent happiness in this world. For all these reasons, God blesses, there is only pain in this world. Therefore, withdraw yourself from attachment to things and resort to true practice of yoga, says Patanjali. Hari Om Tat Sat.